This is VSiN Prime Time, live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Alongside Mark Melusis, I'm Dustin Sweetelson. We're in the waning moments of this Portugal-Croatia matchup. Portugal just scored a few minutes ago to take the lead 2-1. I'm trying to remember on the live line, Mark, they were around plus 340, maybe even 5-1, if memory serves, when they were trailing 1-0. But thanks to a Ronaldo penalty shot, they tied things up. And in the last couple minutes, they've taken the lead. And now we have Croatia on the attack, trying to find some offense and extra time to tie this thing up and send us to some more extra time. But thus far, the efforts have not been great on the offensive end for Croatia.
No, and I think it was plus 425.
That sounds right.
I think was the number for Portugal when they were down 1-0 to Croatia. But you've gotten goals on the penalty by Ronaldo and the header by Ramos. The 94th minute, I believe, here in the second half to give Portugal the lead. A favorite going into it, I think they were, what, minus 225 as this match got going shortly after 7 o'clock Eastern time. So Portugal just has to hold on here to advance to the round of 16.
So we'll have another match coming up later tonight that we're going to look at as well. Switzerland and Algeria, where I was feeling like I might be having a good night. I was going to do a little spicy bet on the draw in that one at around plus 225. But based on the way the night is going, I think I'm just going to be a pure spectator for that affair in the late night action between Switzerland and Algeria. And we'll have more on the U.S. matchup with Belgium coming up from on Monday. I just feel like, Mark, over the years, I've been burnt so many times of believing in this team. And maybe I'm going to ruin this whole run for them where I'm not going to enjoy the ride like everyone else because I keep thinking it's going to end at some point. The matchup with Belgium concerns me. We'll play a clip from Dallin Cuff on the network earlier with his thoughts of the matchup. We'll also hear from the head coach, Mauricio Pochettino, his thoughts on the red card that has the U.S. without one of, if not their best goal scorer for the game with Belgium coming up on Monday. But in the meantime, we have plenty of baseball to look at with the live action across the board. So after scoring in the first couple innings in Atlanta, it's still 5-3 in the seventh, Mark. Braves lead the Cardinals. Dustin May was knocked out after not getting out of the first inning. And both teams have kind of settled down here with the offense.
Yeah, and after the 8 runs that we saw in that first inning between the two teams, the total was up to 15.5. I think it closed at 9 before this game started.
Yep.
Now it's down to 10.5. Minus $1.44. So that's where we stand right now for the Atlanta Braves and the St. Louis Cardinals. May terrible early after being staked at 3-0 lead. He didn't get out of the bottom half of the first inning. He took a liner off the bat of Dom Smith that cleared the bases as the Braves had the bases loaded at that point in time. They tacked on 2 additional runs in that inning to take a 5-3 lead after the first inning. And that's where we stand right now. And the total is down to 10.5.
An update in Toronto. Croatia ties it up at 2s. Oh my
wow.
God. 102nd minute. Croatia in extra time has just tied it up. This drama is insane. I am in awe. I need to see the goal. I just saw them celebrating. But far on the far upper side, they punch it across into the middle. It's headed by a Croatian player, falls under the foot of another. He kicks it to another in a sliding kick goal, and we're tied up at 2s. This is absolutely insane. I'm kind of speechless right now, which is an issue because the job is to say something.
Well, we almost had Portugal through at that point in time.
Yeah.
Give Croatia a ton of credit to come back and even up this match at 2 apiece late. In the second half, we're going to get, if this holds and we don't get a goal here, I think they're playing 13 minutes of extra time here on top of the 90 additional minutes. Then we're going to get 30 minutes of extra time before. And if we're still tied there at 2 apiece, then we get the penalty kicks. But that is an unbelievable comeback. This World Cup, I mean, it has been day in and day out. If you've been locked in, it has been great theater, great drama. And the first match or the match that got us going this evening on VSiN Primetime has left nothing to the imagination. It has been brilliant.
Oh, no, we're getting a VAR review. Are they going to say the guy who passed it last on the assist that he was offsides. He does look offsides here. Does he establish himself back the other way? I think that's a rule. I might be making that up. But looking, oh, no, he's offsides. This goal might be coming back.
Oh.
I think it's coming back. I mean, this is my interpretation, but I do believe he's offsides when the ball approaches him here. Do you have a good look at it?
I would agree with you.
Yeah. Oh, that is depressing. What are they going to say? What are they going to say? I think they just said no goal. Hold on. Are they announcing
it? No goal.
Oh, man. Refs wearing orange. Is it? Yep. No goal. Wow.
No goal.
This is insane. Oh, the letdown for Croatia. And now, how much time are we going to have left? This is another issue I have with the sport. I really need to know how much time is left. I don't need to know how much time we're playing. It doesn't really help anyone involved.
No, but you know what I do appreciate? The refs, even in extra time, let the play finish before they blow the whistle.
That's
like,
true.
Like, if you are on the attack and you're down a goal, like, they'll let the play finish before they – and give you one last opportunity.
Well, I'm trying to think. I think it was, like, that Week 18 game in the NFL with Seattle and the Rams. Remember the Rams scored on that two-point conversion where it looked like
it was
an incomplete pass or something, and it was actually a fumble, and they picked it up and just stepped into the end zone. I feel like that's one
good
thing
memory.
That soccer avoids here is that thing happening. That stinks for Croatia, but Portugal is now likely to advance here. Wow. What an absolutely insane turn of events. In some minor news that just occurred, I should update everyone. The Cleveland Guardians have made it a one-run game with the White Sox, 5-4. David Fry with a home run in the seventh. We will go to the top of the eighth, 5-4. Chicago with the lead on the road here as we await the start in action back with the World Cup. Portugal and Croatia, 2-1. Portugal has the lead. St. Louis tied things up with Atlanta. Right as we were looking at that total and talking about how there was no run scored, Mark, it was a home run, a two-run shot from the St. Louis Cardinals. It was a lefty bat. Was it Burleson? Who was it? It looks like it was Church. Nathan Church, the center fielder. He hit a two-run home run. 5-5, your score in the seventh. St. Louis and the Braves currently tied up there in Atlanta. We mentioned the Rays on top of Kansas City, 5-1. And the Rangers still leading the Tigers, 3-0. Still to come this hour, couple late-night affairs. We've got the Angels at the Mariners, the Padres at the Dodgers. So should be some interesting late night action as a guy who I love watching. Bryce Miller takes the bump tonight for the Mariners.
Oh, he's been great. 3-2 on the season, 1.97 ERA for the Seattle Mariners. One of those teams, you know, over the 500 mark. They're not many. You know, I think there's 6 in total that are over the 500 mark in the American League. The Mariners being one of those teams that just a game over the 500 mark at 44-43. But Miller's been great for Seattle so far this year, pitching to an under 2 ERA.
Yep, and then the Padres and the Dodgers late night. We'll preview that coming up later on in the program as Randy Vasquez faces Roki Sasaki in the final game of the day. But we still have a few minutes left in Croatia and Portugal. Portugal with the 2-1 lead, 107-minute mark. We're approaching the 108 spot now here with that, so... I was going to say clock's ticking, but the clock is not ticking. I mean, technically it is, but they'll just keep adding on. There's a delay in the action. It's so annoying. It bothers me so much.
You feel bad for Croatia. You really do, because they go from the pure adulation, thinking they tied the match up at 2 apiece, to then all of a sudden you go to the video replay and you find out that it's offside. Listen, it's the proper call.
Yeah.
Oh. It really is. But to go from that to then all of a sudden you're back down to 2-1 to kind of regather yourself emotionally to see if you can find a way to tie this game up late against the Portugal team that went into this match against Croatia heavily favored.
And if we're going to learn anything from here, I kind of touched on it when it was 0-0 at halftime, is that a lot of the scoring happens late in soccer. That's just something that jumps off the page to me. And you could have gotten plus money on the over 2.5 pretty early in the second half. So I would say that's just one thing to think about. If you have a scoreless game at halftime, don't be afraid to fire on over, especially if you're going to get plus money when that's involved. And we are final in Toronto, 2-1, Portugal with the win over Croatia. Wow. Comeback victory. And unfortunately, Croatia goes home. Portugal advances, who, by the way, I have 8-1 on them to win this whole thing, but I am not very confident in that ticket at this point in time.
Yeah, survive in advance, right? The old Jim Valvano line when he was the head coach of the North Carolina State Wolfpack. But I will say this. This is where live betting comes into play, Dustin. I mean, we were on the airwaves. Croatia nets the first goal of the match. They lead 1-0. Portugal at that point in time was 4-1 to win in regulation, and they find a way to do it. That's where, you know, when you're watching at home, you have an opportunity to be able to take advantage when the market, especially in a team that you believe is the better team, that is going to find a way to win it. They get a penalty kick goal from Ronaldo, then a header from Ramos to take a 2-1 lead and eventually hold on for the 2-1 victory.
Situation brewing in Atlanta with the Cardinals threatening with a couple runners on. Chicago with nobody out in the eighth. Up by a run, has a runner in scoring position. More on that in a moment. But want to remind you, this 4th of July, we're bringing back something we rarely do at VSiN, a multi-year VSiN Pro subscription. For 1 week only, you'll get 2 full years of VSiN Pro for just $299. That's access through July 2028 at nearly 70% off the regular monthly price. You'll get our NFL betting guide, which is out right now, daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, the AI power prop projections, plus 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app, so you can watch every show on the network at your leisure, whenever it works for you, and every betting guide in the future, including the college football one, which should be out in a few weeks as well. Don't wait. Special 4th of July offer. It disappears after July 7th. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe now to lock in 2 years of VSiN Pro for just $299. He's Mark Melusis. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. When we return on VSiN Primetime, the rumors for LeBron James. Feels like a new team is added to the mix every single day. Who's the best play in the prediction markets? We'll look at the board on the other side of VSiN Primetime.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Alongside Mark Melusis, Dustin Sweetelson coming to you from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. You can always check out the show, SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates everywhere. In case you missed it in the World Cup, Portugal with the comeback win to take down Croatia 2-1. They advance and stay alive in this tournament, but not without criticism because another scary affair for them. But they do indeed move on to the round of 16. Portugal with the win. We have a late night action coming up in just a little bit with Switzerland and Algeria. We'll be all over that in just a minute, just a few segments here, as we have a little bit of time to stretch out before the final game of the night goes down. In Major League Baseball, an update in Atlanta, Mark, the Cardinals in the seventh have nobody out, runners on first and third, and they've now taken a lead on the Braves. If you would have told the Cardinals Dustin May is not going to make it out of the first inning and there will be 8 runs scored, you're trailing 5-3 through one, they would not have believed they were coming back and winning this thing. I want to say I saw 6-1 on them on the live line, and all of a sudden they're up 6-5 in the seventh, and with 2 runners on and nobody out, they have a chance to add some insurance to that.
Yeah, and you look at the Atlanta Braves, I mean, 2-9, I believe the mark is in their last 11 games. And we talked about it a little bit earlier on, scuffling offensively, and they actually put across 5 runs in that bottom half of the first inning, but they've gone, they've scored nothing after that. I mean, the total in the game was up to 15.5 at one point in time. Give the St. Louis Cardinals a ton of credit. They lose their starter early in the game. Bullpen has done a remarkable job. They've steadied the game and now have climbed all the way back up in front.
Absolutely incredible. We'll keep you updated on anything that changes in that or the live baseball action throughout the night here on VSiN Primetime. But one of the big stories of the last 24 hours, as I was driving into the studio yesterday, Jaylen Brown traded. And of the teams that, like, you would have said, hey, you can guess what team Jaylen Brown got traded to. The Philadelphia 76ers might have been one of the last, if we're thinking about the teams that are expected to be above 500. But he winds up going there along with a swap for Paul George and two first-round picks going the other way to Boston. Well, Jaylen Brown's never been shy from opinions, Mark. He went on his Twitch stream earlier today and had this to say about being traded to the Philadelphia 76ers.
Message was received. I wasn't thrilled with the amount of respect that was showed during this process. You know, I think there was a bit of a lack of respect. I think it was fine at one point, and then out of nowhere, things just kind of went left. You know, I think Brad is probably getting a lot of the criticism. I wasn't thrilled the way he facilitated some of the conversations, but I definitely think there's more to it. Chad, there's definitely more to it. I just wish that the more to it could have been explained to me, because if the more to it was explained, I think I would have understood. I thought I earned respect enough to get that explanation, but hey, obviously I was wrong. Hey, but that's life. We move on. One thing I wish in this whole process, you know, and it's good to get it out the way so we can move forward. I wish that my integrity and character haven't been attacked so much during this whole process.
That was Jaylen Brown on his Twitch stream talking about the trade going to Philly. So let's go piece by piece of what he said. Mark, he said the lack of respect. Now, he touched on the conversations with Brad Stevens. Is that his conversations with Brad Stevens or Brad Stevens and the conversations with other teams about making him available here? Because I guess I get where he's coming from. Like, he paid his dues for the franchise and deserved to be treated differently. But they floated him for Giannis. It didn't work out. And then it seemed like there was no going back. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. What do you make of the lack of respect comment?
Well, or the lack of respect for his game,
yeah,
or what he did for the Boston Celtics this past year. Where he stood as compared to Jason Tatum within the organization. The stories that have come out after the trade that, the Celtics believed, or they had grown tired of Jaylen Brown believing that he was the smartest guy in the room. The analytics stuff that got floated out there in terms of where he was analytically, and I think that's where, you get crazy here in terms of grading out players and looking at it. Like, I look at the eyeball test. I mean, Dustin, you and I, we watch a lot of games. Everybody that's listening to us right now on VSiN, you watch games game in and game out, this and that. There's something stats tell you, and then there's the reality, right? Joe Torre told Brian Cashman years ago, got to remember there's a heartbeat to this game. You look at Jaylen Brown, he's a willing defender. He's a former NBA Finals MVP. They've won a championship up there with Boston. If he wanted to be treated on the same level as Jason Tatum within the organization, what's wrong with that? And the idea that the Celtics felt like they needed to get rid of him, like, it's one thing to be included in trade rumors for Giannis Antetokounmpo, but then after that fell apart, it was conversations with Portland and Denver. And then all of a sudden, it felt like this great rush that they had to get Jaylen Brown off the team. My question is to that is why? Like, he hinted upon it on that Twitch stream saying, well, there's more to it than that, where there has to be more to it than that. You know, when this deal becomes official, July 6th, I believe, is the date when this trade does become official and everybody passes their physicals. We'll see what Brad Stevens has to say when he meets with the media up there in Boston. But, you know, at the base of it, when you look at it, Dustin, the thing that was so dumbfounding last night is the Boston Celtics traded a guy at 50% of his value. Any way you want to cut it. I mean, Paul George is 36. They got 7 years older in the deal. They got not as talented a player. And then you're looking at draft capital down the line. That's what's infuriating a lot of people, where the Philadelphia 76ers, if you look at the betting market, people are looking at them significantly different now than they did before 26, 27 hours ago.
Yeah, and I'd argue against Jaylen Brown. The disrespect started when the season ended and you went on your Twitch stream and said it was my most fun year era, pretty much hinting at, because I got a lot of shots. His field goal attempts were up, his points were up, his opportunities were up, his usage was through the roof. He makes a lot of money. I think that's another element as to why Boston wanted to get out from under that contract to have a little bit of versatility. I'm not a big Jaylen Brown guy, but even I would admit that is definitely not market value. That's kind of like when you go to TJ Maxx and you're like, I want to buy a polo. Yeah. I want to buy a Ralph Lauren polo shirt. It's normally $100 in a store, but TJ Maxx has them for $39.99. That feels like what happened here is you're getting Jaylen Brown for the TJ Maxx price if you're Philadelphia. But the market for Brown had dwindled, Mark. Let's hear from Brian Windhorst on ESPN talking about how the Celtics perceived him.
Look, I just know that the Celtics felt that even though Jaylen Brown was talking about himself for MVP, or there was this MVP campaign for Jaylen Brown, the Celtics did not feel that Jaylen had the best season on their team. And I don't mean Jason Tatum. I'm talking about they felt that Derek White had a better season.
Despite the fact he had a poor shooting season.
I agree.
But they felt he impacted winning the most.
And the statistics that people used to analyze.
Yeah, on off and whatnot.
Said that.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that's a bit of a... Derek White didn't have the best season. I don't think Derek White was all that special this year. That is a little bit far-fetched. Now it starts to feel like propaganda to try to say, look, I know we didn't get good value, but we didn't think he was as good as you all think he is. That feels crazy to me, Mark.
Yeah, that's Stevens. I mean, if the Celtics feel that, then they're moronic. I mean, Derek White shot 32% from three last year. He couldn't hit the broadside of a barn when you're looking at it, and he's a really good player. But you can make the argument when you look at Jaylen Brown, who averaged nearly 30 points per game and wanted to be part of the MVP consideration and did get MVP votes, Dustin. Let's also not forget, this was a Boston team coming into the season that everyone thought it was going to be a gap year because Tatum was out with a ruptured Achilles. And then they went out in the regular season and won 56 games in the regular season. And listen, you don't have to be the biggest Jaylen Brown fan. He turns the basketball over with great regularity. I get that. I think he led the NBA in turnovers this past year. But he's a guy that takes big shots, doesn't settle for threes. Great mid-range game. There's no doubt about it. If you're in that Boston organization, you say, well, Derek White impacted winning more than Jaylen Brown this past regular season. To me, that's a bridge too far. And I agree with you. All of a sudden, we're in the spin zone.
And now Boston is the second shot on the board to win the Eastern Conference after this move. The Knicks are first at +320. Boston's +425. The Sixers are 7.5-1. The Pistons are 8.5-1. The Raptors, who added Kawhi, are 9-1. The Heat with Giannis are 9-1. The Cavs are 9.5-1. How is Boston ahead of all of those teams outside of the Knicks?
Yeah, I don't understand that either. I mean, you've regressed, unless you believe that, listen, Tatum's going to replace what Brown did. Mitchell Robinson will be better than Garza down low. But here's the deal. Mitchell Robinson was great in spurts of 15 to 18 minutes as a backup center for the New York Knicks. Like, Mitchell Robinson was not a guy that was averaging 30-plus minutes a game at the center position.
All right, we've got baseball currently in progress. These games starting to wrap up. A couple about to get going. I've got a pitcher prop I like. We'll talk about that on the other side of VSiN Primetime.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on VSiN Primetime, I'm Dustin Sweetelson with Mark Melusis. We have got plenty of action still to come here on the program. One more match in the World Cup for Thursday night, Switzerland and Algeria. We also have a couple baseball games that have yet to start. Before we get to that, though, Moose, Paulie Howard was on before us with Mitch Moss, Follow the Money, staple program here on VSiN. He doesn't like that the U.S. men's soccer team all sing Country Roads at the end of the match. He said it feels like Sweet Caroline. He doesn't like the song. He started making suggestions. One of them, he said, we should have a Rolling Stones song, to which I pointed out to him, we can't have an English band be our mantra song at the end of the World Cup. We fought a war to separate ourselves from those people. Then he said, what about Here I Go Again on My Own? legitimately suggesting Whitesnake and Tawny Kitaen on the Trans Am, which it feels very American to have that kind of as the vibe here. But at that point, have someone dressed as Joe Dirt as our mascot. Do you like Country Roads as the song that the Americans are singing? And is there a song that jumps out that could be an improvement on that to you?
First off, I love it, right? I've seen two John Denver musicals.
Oh, I love it. Yes.
So I am. My mother-in-law is a huge John Denver fan, to the point where I think she actually visited the site where he perished in the plane crash up out in Colorado. So, like, John Denver, I love Country Roads. Like, yesterday when you went sound full on Fox and that entire stadium was singing Country Roads, like, it was an amazing scene. Like, what other, like, Sweet Caroline, but that feels like Boston, Fenway Park. Like, that doesn't necessarily grab it, but I can understand that. I love Neil Diamond. I mean, you know, Neil Diamond's great, and he's fantastic. If you wanted to go Sweet Caroline, that's fine. I don't think you can go with a non-American band.
No.
For it to be the anthem for Team USA in the World Cup here. To me, John Denver and Sweet Caroline, I think it works.
We're so lockstep in this. Country Roads is my favorite song of all time. I have no ties to West.
Oh, it's great.
I have no ties to West Virginia. Some conspiracy theorists claim it's actually written about Western Virginia. I did live in Northern Virginia, but I have no ties to either of those areas. Since I was a kid, when I played roller hockey growing up, before my games, I would skate around singing it to annoy the other team, Country Roads, in upstate New York. It makes no sense. But it's a song I've been obsessed with. I love it as the song. Tweet us. At Mark Malusis, at Dustin Sweetelson.
Yeah.
Let us know.
Hear.
What would be a better song? I like where Paulie's head's at with Whitesnake, but it's like, could you be more white trash? Like, what are we doing?
Let me ask you this. Is there a Guns N' Roses song we could go with?
Welcome to the Jungle, Sweet Child.
But Paradise City?
I love Paradise City. That's my favorite GNR song. The problem is it needs to be something at a pace where everyone can sing it together.
That's true. And that's where, like, I went to Syracuse when you used to have road trips down to West Virginia and Morgantown. They would throw oranges at you. Like, the West Virginia fan was crazy, right? And one of my good buddies, Ed Arzuman, who I went to West Virginia, he said it was an unbelievable atmosphere, right? But when you think about, like, that song is like Americana. When you think about, like, where, and it's John Denver. You could sing along easily to it. You could sing along whether you've had a few libations or whether you're stone cold sober. It does not matter. It's just a great song that puts you in a great mood, and it's a great celebratory song. Could we find another that's on a similar kind of a plane as that? I don't know if we necessarily can. I think it's great.
No.
I mean, I really do. I understand. I think it just works.
I thought about, like, I remember in kindergarten, it was very cult-like. We all had to sing after we did the Pledge of Allegiance, "This Land Is Your Land." Like, that's another one.
Yes.
But that's almost like, too corny for the spot. I need something with a little bit of an edge, and I think that old John Denver and Country Roads gives us that edge. Hopefully I have an edge in one bet tonight, because thus far it has been a pretty uphill battle for your boy. I believe we're 0-4 on the night with a couple still sweating out there. But I do have a play on Bryce Miller as the Mariners are coming up with a matchup against the Angels. Looking at the market right now, Mark, it is Seattle -230, +187 with the Angels. Walbert Urena takes the hill for them. The total 7. I'm not doing anything with the cider total, but I would just say this. What about the Seattle Mariners offense warrants them being a -230 favorite to everyone? I know the Angels stink, but that feels like a crazy number. Almost on principle, I'd consider +195 or +1.5 at -115 on the Angels. Doesn't that seem like a lot of respect for a Seattle team that really hasn't lived up to the billing?
Yeah, it does. Or it's just the lack of respect for the Angels. Yeah. That's the other aspect is it's not a case of where you're like, oh, Seattle's great or their offense is great or we have supreme confidence. I mean, obviously pitching leads the line, but then it's a case of just where the Angels are as a team and thinking that they're not going to be able to do much of anything. So maybe Seattle doesn't necessarily have to be great, but they're still going to find a way to win the game. I think that's kind of where the line is. I agree with you. I think when you look at it at face of it and look at what Seattle has been on the whole this season, just the game over the 500 mark, you're saying to yourself, well, you know, maybe I take a little bit of a roll here or a lean toward the Angels because the Mariners have not been dominant. But I'd probably lean the other way, and I'd probably take Seattle, even though they're a big number, minus 225.
Yeah, I'm going to go over on the strikeout prop for Bryce Miller here, and he's been pretty hot lately. This one's gotten steamed up, though. Last night on the show, I bet over 6.5 at even money. Right now, it's 7.5 at plus 111. I don't love that as much, and I don't like paying that heavy juice to take it down. But if you can see a rogue 6.5 out there, that's something I would definitely look at. He had 11 in his last start against the Pirates. He's been over this number in four straight. The Angels, specifically as a team, second highest strikeout rate in all of baseball. Brian Wu the other night had just 5 against them, but he didn't make it 6 innings. George Kirby did have 7. I'm just going to ride Miller while he's hot here, getting an extended look. They're not bringing in the piggyback situation all that much on these guys as much as they were before. I think Bryce Miller over 6.5 Ks. That's the way I'm looking at even money. So hopefully we'll get that one on the board with the Mariners and Angels about to start in the next 3 minutes in Seattle. So that's where we stand with that. I am just looking at the score in Atlanta while we've been talking about other things. The Cardinals lead the Braves 10-5. They've completely opened this up. It was 8-0 after one. The total of 9 jumped up to 13.5. Then it came back down as we were scoreless until about the 7th inning, it looks like. And now it's 10-5, where we've gone over every potential total in this matchup.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, the Braves scored 5 runs in the bottom half of the first inning, and they haven't scored since. They negated a 3-0 lead for the Cardinals after the top half of the first inning, took a 5-3 lead, and the Cardinals have scored the next 7 runs. I'm trying to count it up here. 1, 2, 3, 4. Braves had 4 hits in the bottom half of the first inning. They've got 3 hits the rest of the way.
Oh, my God, I have an update in Cleveland. Down 5-4 in the 9th. They just walked it off on a 2-run shot. Rocchio with the 2-run homer.
Wow.
And the Guardians, who were up 2-0, then down 5-2, wind up walking it off and winning 6-5. They were minus 116 as a slight favorite in this one. And we go over the total of 8.5. Cleveland gets the win, a walk-off. This is the thing about Cleveland, man. I think we got to start taking them a little bit more serious. At least I do. I really haven't. I thought the Jose Ramirez injury would show itself for them. Hasn't been the issue that I thought it was. It's been a little bit of a hindrance on the offense, but overall, we just got to trust this front office knows what they're doing in managing their players, Mark.
Yeah, I would agree. And we were talking a little bit about earlier, Dustin, in terms of who you favor, who you lean in on the American League Central, before this game went final. And no one could have predicted them going out there and walking this one off and coming away with the victory. But you kind of trust the Guardians more than I trust the White Sox. Even if I, thinking that the Tigers can go on some kind of run after sweeping away the Yankees and the Bronx, you still got the Scooble sweepstakes out there. Don't necessarily believe in the Minnesota Twins. I think it's the Guardians if they can overcome. And I think they're now 4-3 in their last 7 games, overcoming that Ramirez injury. And he's going to be out for another couple weeks. That's a big time hit. But this is the kind of one of those wins where you circle on the calendar and you say to yourself, and you can't judge baseball based on one singular game or one singular outcome. I understand injuries come into play, but this might be a game in which you circle on a Thursday night where they're able to come back and walk this game off as maybe a kind of a little bit of a launching pad type of game for the Cleveland Guardians. We'll see.
Let's see how deep we're willing to go. They're 11-1 to win the American League. They're 31-1 to win the World Series. This is something I want to carry over into the next segment because just looking at the pieces they have, there's some young bats that are certainly an improvement on what they've had in years past. They have a rotation. Gavin Williams, Parker Messick, Tanner Bibee, who's been a bit up and down, but he has ace stuff. Cantillo stepped up, and then the elite bullpen with Cade Smith on the back end. I think maybe 33-1 might be a number that's just a little bit too long to leave out there on them. Want to remind you, VSiN.com, we're offering an awesome 4th of July deal. We don't do this often. A multi-year VSiN Pro subscription, 2 years of VSiN Pro for just $299. Access through July of 2028, nearly 70% off the regular monthly price. This will disappear after July 7th. Get it now at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe.
Mm-hmm.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on VSiN Primetime, Dustin Sweetelson, Mark Melusis, still to come on the program. We have more World Cup in about an hour and 15 minutes. Mark and I will break that one down between Switzerland and Algeria. We've also got baseball still going on. One game just underway in Seattle in the first inning. Bryce Miller and the Angels doing battle, or Bryce Miller and the Mariners doing battle with the Angels. Some score updates for you real quick. Cardinals lead the Braves 10-5. The Rays on top of the Royals 5-3. That one in the ninth inning. You have the Rangers leading Detroit 5-3 at home. And we await the start of the Padres and Dodgers, which we'll hit in a little bit here. But continuing conversation from last segment, Mark, you know, I was just looking at the betting market. The Cleveland Guardians 11-1 to win the AL, 33-1 to win the World Series over at FanDuel. I just want to see if there's a different number over at DraftKings, because sometimes they're just a little bit off. DraftKings has the Guardians 35-1, so a little bit of a better number there. And then in terms of winning the American League pennant, they're 12-1, so a little bit better there as well. I don't want to underestimate this team, because we think about them doing more with less over and over again. We've kind of reached a point where that next generation of young, controllable players are up, specifically offensively. When you think about Manzardo and the power potential, Bazzano, the Australian second baseman, since he got called up, the offense has certainly been better. We just saw Rocchio hit a home run as a walk-off against Chicago. Angel Martinez is out. Chase DeLauter was contending for AL Rookie of the Year since returning from his injury. He's been knocking the cover off the ball. I just think we need to change the lens we look at the Guardians with, because the thought is always, oh, they have a ton of pitching, they don't have a lot of offense. There's enough offense if the pitching holds up and lives up to its potential where they can hang with anyone in a wide open American League.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, I think that second point is, if you're searching for a team, right? Historically, we were talking a little bit during the course of the break, the Guardians are usually a really good second half team, right? And this is a heck of a come from behind kind of a statement victory on a Thursday night. And Dustin, you ran through all the young players there, and it's an American League where you're trying to find somebody, right? Like, you know, I grew up a Yankee fan. Would I ever take the Yankees right now to win the American League at 2-1? No, I would not. I mean, given the fact of the injuries that they've had, they don't hit with runners in scoring position. They're very home run reliant. Back into the bullpen needs to be adjusted. We'll see what Brian Cashman and company do at the MLB trade deadline. Then you got Seattle sitting there at 4-1, according to FanDuel, right? The Mariners are a game over the 500 mark. You talk about the lack of offense when you're looking at the Mariners in that lineup. The Tampa Bay Rays, why not Cleveland? Like, in an American League in which there's really, even the teams that are good in the American League East, they are not without issues or concerns with them long term. Why can't you find a team that maybe scraps their way through? And that's kind of the fun when you look at the American League. This is decidedly different than the NL. When you look at Milwaukee and you look at Chicago, you look at Atlanta, Philadelphia. Obviously, you've got the two-time defending World Series champs, the Los Angeles Dodgers, and the National League West. That is a gauntlet, you know, very similar to what you saw in the NBA in the Western Conference, you see in the National League and Major League Baseball. And then you look at the American League, similar to the Eastern Conference when you're looking at the NBA, where, you know, it's kind of dealer's choice. You're trying to find a team that you're trying to convince yourself, can they get hot at the right time? And as we've seen in Major League Baseball, you get hot in the right time in the month of October, especially in a wide open American League, no dominant teams to speak of. Why can't it be the Guardians?
Yeah, I just think the pitching, too, is severely underrated. Gavin Williams has had a couple bad starts, but for the most of the season, he's been really good. In second half of last year, he was dynamite. Tanner Bibee hasn't been the same guy, but he still has the potential to be a frontline guy. Parker Messick feels like he has staying power, as if he's going to contend for the Cy Young at some point during his career. And then you throw in Cantillo and Ciccone, who might be moved to the bullpen once we get to the postseason, combined with Gattis and Sobrowski going into Cade Smith. I just look at the American League right now. You poke holes through the Yankees. Seattle's offense, I don't trust. And those pitchers, feels like when one of them's good, the other ones aren't good. I just don't know what to make of them. Tampa Bay, I don't know if they have the arms that Cleveland does. Texas doesn't have the offense that I trust when it comes to October baseball. Maybe Toronto at 14-1, but I keep talking about them and not buying in on the ticket. I just think Cleveland is as good as any of them at 12-1 to win the American League. And at that point, you put a little bit of it on them to win the World Series. I want to talk about something that went down earlier today in case you missed it. Cincinnati beat the Brewers 7-2. epic pitching showdown as it was billed. Chase Burns versus Jacob Mizorowski, who is your Cy Young favorite. Burns got the better of Mizorowski here. Six innings, four hits, two earned, four strikeouts. His ERA on the year, 2.40. But the story's Mizorowski. Five innings, five runs. Only one was earned. He did have 10 strikeouts. His ERA is at 1.47. Looking at the National League Cy Young market, and he's still the favorite at minus 250. On his trails is Christopher Sanchez at plus 260. Then it gets way bigger after that with Chris Sale beginning at 19-1. But why did Mizorowski's number stay that way? Why did his ERA remain at 1.47? Well, there was a play in this game, Mark, where Cincinnati put down a bunt. It's fielded by the third baseman, and it looks like the runner's going to be safe in an infield hit. Jake Bowers drops the ball at first. I don't think that's relevant. I think the runner is going to be safe whether he caught it or not. It is ruled an error. With that, Mizorowski gives up five runs, four of them unearned because of that error. I wonder if we retroactively go back and grade this one a hit and how that impacts this market, because based on my eyes, I think that's an infield single.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think, you know, 99% of the time, that's going to be an infield single. And I think you got to paint it where you look at the third baseman at a bare hand the ball and basically throw off one leg in order to get an accurate throw off the first base. And I think the runner was going to be safe regardless, whether or not Bowers caught the ball at first base or not. So I agree with you. And maybe that's a little bit of home cooking. We've seen it before, Dustin, you know, at times when you're looking at the score, when you're looking at hometown teams, whether it be a hit, we've seen it before in, you know, batting races to try and go out there and win a batting crown at the end of the season or over the course of a year. But clearly that was a little bit of home cooking, because that's a hit. That's not an error.
Yeah, that's tough. And I have Mizorowski 15-1 to win National League Cy Young, so I'd prefer that to stay the ruling with that being an error, but I just don't think that's correct. And at some point, I'm going to have to do something with that ticket. I have a lot of concerns, Mark, because he's a young guy, because you have a team in Milwaukee that their goal is to win a World Series. They need to get past the Dodgers in the National League postseason, and he's going to be the X factor of their ability to do that. I wonder how they manage him down the stretch, because remember, a year ago, that was a story as a rookie. They were managing his innings. He's a lanky guy. There's not a lot of bulk to him. He's never thrown 200 innings in his life. I'm concerned that they want him to win this award this year.
Yeah, and last year, I'm just trying to look it up. Last year, he threw 66 innings over 14 starts. He was in 15 games. He threw 66 innings. In those 66 innings, he had 87 Ks. He's already made 17 starts this year, 9-4 on the season. You mentioned a 1.47 ERA. He's thrown 104 innings so far this season with 156 strikeouts. I mean, his strikeout rate is utterly ridiculous, and he wasn't particularly sharp earlier today, Dustin. But, yeah, I'd be a little bit concerned here in terms of Mizorowski and the way the Milwaukee Brewers, who are very, very kind of forward-thinking organization, we know that, very analytically driven, but they do a really good job of putting together a winning team, having a good idea of what they need and what the earmarks are for putting together a winning team. There's no doubt the talent of Jacob Mizorowski, but I'd be a little bit concerned in terms of how he gets used here in the second half by the Milwaukee Brewers.
Also in that game, Sal Stewart continues to put up really good numbers as a rookie, 1-for-4 with a home run. He leads all rookies, NL rookies, with 17. He's tied for the second most RBI in baseball. Looking at that National League Rookie of the Year, there's a lot of names worth mentioning. J.J. Weatherholt, the favorite at minus 155. Stewart's 3.5-1. But if I'm betting anyone here, I'm still putting my money on Connor Griffin from Pittsburgh, Mark. 10-1 right now, just came back from an injury. He already has a home run in just five games since returning. He also has two steals. It just feels like he's a lock for double-digit home runs, around 15 in my eyes, and potentially 30-plus steals. And at the end of the year, that's going to jump off the page.
Well, and then you also have to look at, you know, the value where you're looking at it as well. Listen, I think it's a wide open race when you look at the complexion for Rookie of the Year in the National League. But I would agree with your assessment. As long as he stays healthy, the speed and power combination that Connor Griffin does represent, and if he stays healthy the rest of the way, you know, you're going to get, as you mentioned, I would probably say north of 14 home runs on the season, anywhere between 14 and 20 home runs on the season. He's going to give you that speed as well. So there's a positive aspect to that. And the value is there when you look at the betting board as well.
No doubt. Developing situation, it looks like, in this Angels and Mariners game. Seattle's runners on first and third. Looks like Julio Rodriguez on a double play ball going to second from first took a throw off the helmet. I want to say they're looking at him, but he ran to third, and he looked all right there. I think it's just precautionary. He's staying in the game. He seems fine. Okay. It looks like he's fine. There's no blue medical tent in baseball, by the way. Don't have to go. Brian Daboll would not want to manage baseball if they had a blue medical tent. I can tell you that much. All right, we'll talk a little golf in the next hour. Also some NBA, but more importantly, plenty of World Cup to look at right here on VSiN Primetime.